Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. This is my friend, Beth, who is a single mother, sharing custody of her 11-year-old daughter. And she is a biological mother, a birth mother of a child she placed for adoption over 25 years ago.
Getting that started so I can be sure that it's working. And it is.
We have to talk. Hi.
Okay, we're good. Tell me about your family.
Just me and my daughter at home.
That family? Whoever your family is.
Okay. My mom and my dad live nearby, and I have an older brother, and he's in town. And he just got married second time, and my nephew's in college, and my niece is in high school.
So that's your...
That's my...
Those are your people.
Those are my people.
Mm-hmm. And you are currently... Have you always been a single mom?
For the most part, I separated from her dad when she was one. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you've been single momming for...
Most of my life.
How old is she?
She's 11.
For 10 years, yeah. You've been doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into the other stuff, why don't you tell me a little bit about your challenges and what it's been like to be a single mom?
Thank God my parents are close by. I rely on them a lot. They take her to orthodontist and piano, and they're, you know, babysitters, and they're, you know, they're very helpful. Her dad lives in Colorado Springs, so it's not like he could, help out if he wanted. She sees him every other weekend. So, and that is always a nightmare. So she starts getting anxiety about going to her dad's by Wednesday, if not sooner, of the week she has to go. So she hates it there. And he's pretty, she has to be somebody else. She, my words are walking on eggshells because I lived with him. So I know. She says, I can't do anything right. Nothing's ever good enough. So she just has to, just hold it together and be somebody different. So then when I get her, then it's all, she lets loose, and then I have to deal with all that. And I feel like she acts up, a little bit with me, probably just processing having to be somebody different at her dad's. So my struggle has been finding balance, because I want her to have freedom and choices and things that she doesn't have at her dad's. So I feel like I'm overcompensating, yet I have to find, I have to find a balance and make sure that I have boundaries and things like that too.
So who's the community that has helped you through this? Is that your family that you talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. Mom and dad. Huge support.
And how do you do this financially? Because Colorado is ridiculously expensive to live in. So how do you keep up?
I got lucky that I bought my house right soon after I separated from her dad. So we've lived there 10 years, and that was right before everything started skyrocketing. So I bought my house in foreclosure for like $137,000.
Oh my gosh. That's how you did it.
Yeah. And now that one across the unit across the street sold for $525,000, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I couldn't afford to live here. I just got lucky that I was able to buy when I did, but I do get child support, but a lot of that goes, I have a college fund for her. So, and she has braces, and that's fun. And she has to see a counselor because she has to process all this stuff with her dad. So she's pricey.
The price you pay for these young people that we love so much.
Yeah.
I think it's required. I couldn't even imagine that being an option to cut it out, because it's just their happiness is everything, I think, to most mothers.
Yeah.
And you'll do whatever it takes. And, you know, people ask me, why do you stay in contact with the birth family if it's so difficult? I'm like, no, it's going to be difficult no matter what. Mm-hmm. But this at least helps us process that as we go through it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, my theory is you do what you have to do for them, you know?
Yeah, so funny. Her dad even, when I was letting him know she was getting braces and he would need to pay for half of that, he called even the orthodontist, prove that this is medically necessary.
Really?
Yeah. And the lady's like, yeah, her teeth need to fit in her face. It's important.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah.
You don't even know who's your community until you realize the orthodontist receptionist had your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. What advice would you give other single moms who are maybe 10 years behind you when you just left him and you just, because that was an abusive relationship, right? Mm-hmm. You left an abusive relationship to raise your daughter. What would the advice be?
You know, and one of the things, cause he was arrested for domestic violence. And, I distinctly remember the lady that I was working with. She was like, you are the best victim and like the poster child that we would want, you know, for domestic violence, because you truly basically have your shit together and you're leaving him. Like most women they always go back, you know, they take him back. Right. And so I guess I would say, no matter how hard it is, not only are you worth it, but your child is worth it. That's why I left, because Brinley was worth it.
How long had you been with him?
7 years. We weren't married.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
We were only married a year, but we were together.
That's a long time to be together and mm-hmm. with abuse, probably emotional mostly, and then towards the end became more violent, I'm guessing.
He was never physically violent. He would restrain me, but it was emotional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what she's dealing with.
Right. Once every other week.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Every other weekend.
But to a young mind, that's everything. So damaging. I'm so glad she has you.
Thanks.
Because you're like a big badass mama who.
Thank you.
You know, will hold her hand.
Yeah.
Through the craziness. That's so brave of you.
And even if it's hard, I mean, like I said, it's worth it to not be in that environment, even though, yeah, she has to go to her dad's, but having her in a stable, you know, environment was, you know, it's definitely worth it, but you got to rely on your people.
Right. You cannot do it alone.
No.
I think that's the factor that I keep hearing over and over again. It doesn't matter what your situation is. You will succeed if you choose to let other people in mm-hmm. and help you out.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're saying, is that you're doing it because of the people you surrounded yourself with. Mm-hmm. So you have another story.
I do.
That you said you were willing to tell. Are you still willing to tell me your other story?
Yeah.
So start it.
So I was in college and I was 18 and I got pregnant with my boyfriend at the time. And, it was one of those things that, I guess probably because my mom always raised me to be accountable for my actions. So, not that I have any issues with abortion. I do not politically, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I have no issues. But personally, I couldn't take that route. I knew that I couldn't be I couldn't raise him. I couldn't give him what he needed. You know, mm-hmm. I was still a college student and, you know, obviously didn't make it with that relationship. So I knew that it wasn't going to be what he deserved for me to keep him. So I kind of just knew right away that adoption was the option for me, but I had to do an open adoption because I needed to know that he was okay. And I wanted to be, a bystander at least in his life. So,
And how did his dad, how did your boyfriend take that?
He was on the same page. He also wanted an open adoption, though when it came time, he disappeared. So there's been no contact. So I think he couldn't emotionally handle it, but he was all on board, you know, at the beginning at least.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty cool. We went to the adoption agency and, went through this book. We did Lutheran Family Services was the adoption agency we went through. And, they have a book of, or at least they did then.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the pictures and the write-up of these families. And, you know, there's certain things I was looking for because, I wanted her to be a stay-at-home mom. That was very important to me because she had to be somebody that I couldn't. So if she was a working mom, well, I could do that too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So it needed to be something that I couldn't be. So that was number one for me. And I wanted them to have some kind of faith. And I also wanted them to have another child that was also adopted because I didn't want him to be, I wanted him to be with another sibling that was also adopted. So that was pretty, right. I had pretty,
very specific
things I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going in there and I prayed right before I went in and I was like, God, you better show me the family or I'm not doing this. If it's not the perfect family, I'm going to do this myself. So if this is what you want, you better make it super clear. And I was like threatening God. And so anyway, I go through the book and Bob and Dana, his parents, just stood out like right when I read their profile. And I finished the book, but I kept going back and I kept going back. And the boyfriend was outside waiting because we wanted to do it separately.
Right.
And so I picked Bob and Dana. I didn't say a word to him. And he came in and he looked at the book and he came out of the room and he's like, Bob and Dana.
Wow.
It was crazy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So, I just got chills everywhere. Oh my gosh. That's so amazing.
I'm like, all right, God, you took my threat.
So we went through with Lutheran Family Services.
You did.
For my son.
Oh my word.
Yeah. I don't know how they showed our books, but we had to make a personal book, like a book. So that was for us, that was 9 years ago. So how long ago was this for you? I mean, you don't have to age yourself, but you do.
I had him when I was 19. I'm 47. I'm 45.
How old are you?
I'm 45. I just turned 45. So he's 26.
Oh my gosh. You have a 26-year-old son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very crazy.
Okay. Walk me through. I'm going to make you walk you through the hard stuff because you volunteered. Okay.
Yeah.
So did you meet the family before you gave birth?
Yes. So I had to meet them.
And how far along were you?
Oh, I mean, I decided we had made this decision right off the bat. So I was probably only 2 or 3 months pregnant. Probably.
Oh, wow. That's way early.
Yeah, we were, because that was my firm decision, like right away. I knew that's what I had to do. So I met them and, they were great. And they had, their son, who he was 5 at the time, I think, who was also adopted. And it's so funny, just side note, they all look like each other. I think it's so crazy that they all physically, like,
right.
Their features, they look like they're a biological family.
Even. Like my children?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's uncanny. It's nuts.
Yeah. But I think also as you're looking at a book, you're also looking for somebody like you and looks like you. I mean, you have to imagine looking for something familiar when you're looking through these pictures of people. And I think that's why, at least that's why I know my son was chosen. We looked familiar and our lifestyle looked familiar.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's my theory and I'm sticking to it. I'm not a professional anything. So continue. Okay. That was way early.
They were there with me the whole, like they went to, Dana always went to the doctor's appointments with me. Every step of the way they were there with us. So with me, Eric, he was there like for a few appointments. He started slowly kind of easing his way out, but
it's very convenient that
Dana really wanted to be there.
You get the opportunity to weasel your way out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
That's amazing that she got to be there. How were her nerves? I know you can't speak for her, but do you know, was she nervous that you were going to change your mind?
Yeah. Because they had actually had that happen. they were supposed to have a little girl, and mm-hmm. and she changed her mind. So I think she was super, super scared.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'm not doing that to you. So this is a done deal. But I think she never, until she had that baby,
right?
You know, and really until we relinquished, we had to go to court to relinquish our rights after the fact. So I'm sure she didn't breathe until
I didn't that. Breathe.
Yeah,
I didn't breathe until that moment.
It was really, I mean, it was really neat. She, like I said, came to every appointment, and so she and I, you know, we have a great relationship still, and a lot of times she'll call and we'll just talk. We don't even talk about Dylan. We just talk and talk and talk and talk about whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So
I love that. I have that relationship with my kids' biological mothers. And you have to know that knowing the person that my children came from is a gift you can't even imagine. It's like, I mean, I can't explain it to people.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like my sisters.
That's awesome.
And I feel like I would, do some crazy things to protect them. So go through your pregnancy. Was there any point throughout your pregnancy that you had second thoughts? Or for me, I can imagine every day I would have second thoughts.
I mean, I was firm on my decision, and I absolutely knew that that was the best thing for him. Did I struggle with it? I cried myself to sleep every night. And I wrote in a journal to him that I gave him a few years ago. I think it was like, but I finally gave him the journal that I had kept, because I wrote to him every night. And it was, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. How am I going to, you know, because I, you know, you love that little person inside of you. So it was hard, but I knew that that's what I was going to do. So
we come to the day that you go into labor. How does that all play out?
So I was actually 2 weeks past my due date.
Oh my gosh.
They induced me.
What a nightmare.
And he, when they ended up basically throwing me into hard labor, they gave me the Pitocin. I started contractions, but it wasn't enough. So then they broke my water, which sent me into hard labor. And then his heart rate was dropping, so I guess he couldn't handle the hard labor. So they're like, well, he's probably going to die unless you have a C-section, but it's your decision.
Like, that's not a decision, ma'am.
Okay. So we'll have a C-section.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And it was amazing. That was the hardest day. Definitely the hardest time was in the hospital. It was wonderful because I got to hold him and smell him. And I still remember how he smelled. Sorry. but I got to be with him, just me and him,
mm-hmm.
for a few days. So that was awesome that I got that time.
That's so important. I think as adoptive parents, we fear that moment the most. But for me, I made sure both of my children's birth moms held those babies,
yeah,
for as long as they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
before they left.
Yeah, they were there at the hospital.
And I can't even imagine holding them. Their fear was, but if I hold them, I will never let them go. And they said, that's your choice to make. That's not my choice to make. You know, you should have those moments with that baby.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like 3 days because post C-section,
mm-hmm.
did you nurse him at all?
No. I think cause they didn't want me to, cause I needed to dry up.
Right.
So I just
didn't want to get that situation started.
Right. But yeah, I didn't even want to sleep cause I just wanted to,
soak it all in.
Yep.
Every second of it.
So they came to the hospital and took him, and that was probably the second hardest day was the day after. Just that, you know, this baby that you've held and loved for 9 months is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that was hard.
Almost literally empty.
Yep.
You feel completely.
And that's the way it felt. So I just had to keep reassuring myself that this was for him. This was for him. It's not about me. So.
And then how did the open relationship, did you guys plan ahead of how that would look like? Were you like, I'll write you letters? Were they like, I'll mail you pictures? Or did you go through Lutheran Family Services? How did you start that process? Because that was in the beginning days of open adoption.
Yeah.
From my understanding, there wasn't a lot of rules back then.
Yeah, we just handled it ourselves. And Dana was always very open that, you know, whenever you want to see him and get together, we probably get together on an average of twice a year. So it was his birthday. He was born on Christmas Eve. So somewhere around Christmas time, we kind of do Christmas and his birthday with them. And then usually we'd like meet for lunch or dinner or something one time in the summer. Mm-hmm. We probably saw it when he was younger. It might've been a few more times than that at first, but it's really hard because I wanted to respect their boundaries and I didn't want to make them uncomfortable. But they're great. Mm-hmm. They've been great. I mean, I went to soccer games and, you know, they'd let me go, you know, to games and things like that. So
that's amazing. I'm guessing they're local then.
Yeah. They live in Arvada.
Oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went to the graduation party from his high school and,
did he ever ask you any questions about it?
You know, he never did. He never really had any questions, but I don't know if it's just because everything was always so open and he saw me and he knew who I was. And, he never really asked me anything. But if he ever wondered, he probably got more than he ever wanted to know with my journal.
You're welcome, son. As a biological mother, watching another family raise your son, how difficult was that?
You know, at first it was hard. It's hard because you don't have the control and you're like, I wouldn't do that. Or I wouldn't have done that, you know, and they did a fantastic job on him. So can't complain.
Yeah.
But that was hard. It was hard at first.
What questions have you been asked before as a biological mother that, I don't know, do a lot of people know? I mean, have you been open about it with other people?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm an open book, so I've been, you know, open about everything. I think what Dana, Dylan's mom, has always told me, that she's very grateful for me, because I think it's rare, and you've probably come across mm-hmm. some of the rare circumstances that the birth mothers are healthy enough to be able to actually go through with it. And then also to maintain a healthy relationship and boundaries, mm-hmm. you know, throughout their life. Her other son, they don't have the same experience and relationship with his biological mother. Cause she's crossing boundaries. Like, said something to him, like, they met one time and she said, didn't it feel good to be with your own blood? And just killed Dana. So I think that our circumstances are actually pretty unique, unfortunately.
No, I agree that I feel like my circumstances are pretty unique in that I have a pretty open relationship. I mean, we see our kids' biological families probably 3 times a year, maybe 4. Like, mm-hmm. They both live 2 hours from us mm-hmm. in the same direction. So we try to hit them on the same day. You know, even I'm like, all right, you're here, we're going, teamwork. So what advice would you give someone not in the situation of deciding, because that nobody can give advice on that, deciding whether what to do with your pregnancy,
right?
That's such a personal decision based on factors that I have no business asking about. You know what I mean? But what would your advice be for someone who's a week out? They just placed their baby. They're a week out. How did you rebuild yourself that year? Because that couldn't have been an easy rebuild process.
No, I mean, I was pretty depressed for, you know, a few weeks. I'm luckily a person who I just bounce back. It's thank God. But, I was in a pretty bad place for a couple weeks, just mourning and depressed. And it was rough. It was really rough. And I think I just had to reassure myself that this was the best thing for him. This was the best thing for him. And I kept going back to, I'd have to think about, okay, if I had kept him, say, like, what would it be like? Because, you know, my parents, as supportive as they are, said from the get-go, we're not raising another child. This is not going to be on us. This is not financially, nothing. I was like, what would this look like? How, you know, I wouldn't have been able to provide for him. I wouldn't been able to, you know, be the mother I wanted to be. And so I just keeping focused on that this was the best for him. This was the best for him. And knowing that I'd be able to see him, mm-hmm. and knowing that I would be able to, you know, have contact with him, really helped. So
what is loss like that feel like?
I don't know. I don't even know if I can describe it, but I think that's the hardest loss the hardest thing I've ever done, for sure.
Because he's still there.
Right.
He's not gone.
Yep.
He's safe.
Yep.
But he's not.
But he's not mine.
He's not with you.
Mm-hmm. It's a pretty huge pain.
To this day. For the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a trauma that you will experience for the rest of your life. Just like.
And it gets easier. I mean,
right.
Every time I would see him, I'd have to cry and mourn and go through it all over again. Every time. You know,
well, just every time my children mm-hmm. see their biological parent mothers, they do the same thing. They just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They just have emotions that they don't know how to process.
Right.
Right. And you're processing those emotions.
Yeah.
Without getting angry and using substances.
Yeah. I mean, it got easier. It did get easier. And it's fun to see, he and Brinley interact. Brinley really takes to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know, like, the relationship. She just knew of Bob and Dana and Dylan. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were just part of our life. We'd see them around Christmas time every year and mm-hmm. sometimes in the summer. And she just loves Dylan and was always just really drawn to him. But she didn't know. Not that that was a secret. It's just... I wanted her to be mature enough to understand it. And
right.
so I hadn't told her yet. And I kept thinking, when will I? This summer, we're in Idaho for my brother's wedding. And I don't remember exactly the context. Something about, I don't know, like saying something about Brinley's my only child or something about being an only child.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom says, in front of Brinley, she's not your only child. Almost didn't make the wedding. Pissed off. Just a wreck. She was a wreck because she was like, and I'm like, well, that's who Dylan is. I'm not your only child. So it was awful. She felt like she had been, why did you lie to me? Mm-hmm. So she felt so betrayed and just like, so it was so awful for her to understand that she wasn't my only child. And then, and now she's pretty excited. She can't wait to see
right.
me. She's like, I'm going to see Dylan. When are we going to see Dylan? Because now she knows now she has
knows.
A brother.
Now yeah. she knows.
But that was a hard.
No, imagine.
I'm like, thank you, Mom.
Imagine she was the adopted one and you just told her that Ooh. She was adopted. Ooh. I have a hard time with that. Watching families go through. And I know everybody has their reasons. For this or that.
Mm-hmm.
But my rule is I don't lie to my kids. I'm not going to keep secrets from them.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell them emotionally, you know, appropriate things.
Mm-hmm.
But from day one, you're adopted. This is what that means. That just means you have a whole bunch of people that love you. And, you know, the trauma, I don't have to teach them about the trauma because that's automatic. Mm-hmm. You know, they also lost something that day that they can't name mm-hmm. or understand.
Right. Dana said she said the hardest thing, and she thought it was really cruel. They made her write a letter basically saying goodbye to their biological child that they would never have. Mm-hmm. Did they make you do something like that?
No,
she thought that was pretty.
That's cruel. Bullshit, is what that is.
Yeah.
Because that was
getting them ready.
That's
to
like
be an
you having
parent.
To write a letter saying goodbye to your child that you mm-hmm. placed for adoption, that I'm never going to see you again. And mm-hmm. so that just erases any trauma that I've ever had from that situation. And that's just false. I will always have trauma mm-hmm. from the fertility treatments. I mean, it almost took my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It almost took my sanity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was suicidal at times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to write off that trauma. Mm-hmm. It's there and it's there for life. And my kids don't solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Adopting children doesn't solve your fertility trauma. And right. I think that's what some adoption agencies were like, well, now this isn't your cure to infertility. And I think parents and families are not idiots. They're like, but it's the cure for the hole in my heart that is a family
mm-hmm.
that is having children in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just teach me how to raise an adopted child so that their life is as good as I can possibly make it.
Mm-hmm.
And stop telling me about my emotional well-being. Get me some counseling, maybe. I don't know. Did you have post-adoption counseling requirement?
I could just use my mom.
Well, your mom's a pastor, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
How did that play into it?
No, I mean, I remember I called her when I decided I was going to tell her I was pregnant, and she was like, I love you. It was like very, I love you. Do you need anything right now? I can't talk about this, but I love you. Do you need anything before I go? Okay.
Wow.
And then later it was, you know, she's like, you need to know that your dad and I are not helping at all in this
mm-hmm.
emotionally. We're going to be there for you. That's it. So,
wow. That's
keep that in mind.
Your mom sounds like you. I'm a very direct person. Here's what I'm offering you.
Yeah.
Nothing. Emotional support. Any questions? Sign
pretty
here.
Much. It's like, okay. So they very much supported the open adoption. So mom's like the spokesperson for mom and dad. So mm-hmm. when I say they.
Mom's the spokesperson. Yeah. Right? Dad's the silent nodder.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What she said.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but they were very supportive, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on board with my decision for sure.
Were you the youngest?
Yeah.
Okay. So they were like, they'd just gotten you out of the house. They were like, freed. What now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, we're free. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're free. We're not doing another 18 years.
I actually told my brother first because I wanted help in how to tell my mom and dad. And he was like, I got nothing for you.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, yeah. Well, what's the right way to tell your parents that you're pregnant? What is the right way?
And who does it over the phone? I don't remember why I had to do it over the phone. There must have been a good reason. Maybe I wanted to do it over the phone.
That's a good, that's like, just now how she responded though, I feel like is a really good.
Mm-hmm. Do you need anything right now?
I love you.
I love you. I can't talk about this.
I'm going to need a minute. I'm going to need a minute.
Process this.
Maybe that's why it was meant to, like, that way she knows she didn't say anything she regretted.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat. What brings you peace right now?
With that, just seeing how successful my son is and mm-hmm. just how, you know, what a great human being he is. And you know, just that he's happy and doing life. And I'd like to think that some genetics played a good part in that, but I also know that that's because I made the right choice, that he had the perfect parents.
Mm-hmm. I think genetics also played a pretty good part in that. Genetics aren't nothing, okay? Nature and nurture is a thing. Mm-hmm. You get both of it. Yeah. You get the whole package. And yeah. I'm grateful that I've got good genetics on my children's side as well. Because my nurture can only go so far. Their good genetics is going to have to come into play at some point. In what way do you think you can give yourself grace today just as being a single mom? And, you know, you're not as worried about this boy that's an adult with his own job and his own life. But what grace can you give yourself right now?
I've done the best that I can. Always trying to put both of them first before myself. And yeah, I've done the best I can.
Thanks for listening to my interview with Beth Schaefer. What an inspirational woman. Beth is currently working on a murder mystery game. It will be posted in my show notes as soon as it's available. You can find out more information about this podcast and my blog at SheilaKChester.com.
Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today.